This episode is brought to you by Dietz and Watson.
Molly, it's time we have the talk about hot dogs.
Okay. Well, hey, I'm looking for a hot dog that's the real deal, Matthew.
Like a classic hot dog that, like, when you think of, like, the platonic ideal of a hot dog, I recommend Dietz and Watson's Dietz dogs.
Ah, well, I've heard that they're handcrafted and made using only Dietz and Watson premium meat.
I can vouch for this because Dietz and Watson sent us a big box of hot dogs and other delights, and wife of the show, Lori, and I had them for dinner last night. We had the classic beef Dietz dogs with toasted buns with sauerkraut and pickled jalapenos and Dietz and Watson ballpark-style yellow mustard.
Do you think you'd recommend Dietz and Watson hot dogs for fried rice?
Oh, yeah. Fried rice with some sliced hot dogs. I'm going to be doing that soon. Wife of the show, Lori, is going to be making the hot dog flour buns from Christina Cho's cookbook, Mooncakes and Milk Bread. Very excited for this.
And I'm especially pleased because Dietz and Watson does things the right way. So this means, like, no additives, no fillers, no artificial flavors, no cutting corners. You can feel good about this stuff.
Dietz and Watson. It's a family thing since 1939.
Shop now at dietzandwatson.com/the right way.
That's Dietz, D-I-E-T-Z, and watson.com/the right way.
Hello!
Our theme song sounds so, like, quaint and wholesome.
I know. It's our theme song that we wrote.
It is. It's totally
original.
My name's
Johnny Garage Band, and I wrote that song.
Tonight's topic is glazed donuts.
Of course. Thank you again to Dewa Dorje. That's a very tough act to follow.
An extremely tough act to follow. So both Matthew and I have our mothers here in the audience tonight, which is always tricky. I think this is maybe the second live show that my mother has attended, and probably like the fourth for your mom.
I think so, yeah.
And I'm amazed that we're still doing these live shows, given that our mothers attend them now.
They will not take the hint.
They will. I know, when my mom was like, I bought tickets for myself and all my friends. I was like, oh God, I'm not going.
Molly's mom is named Tony and has brought at least one other Tony along with her, and maybe more. How many Tonys are there in total?
There are three Tonys.
Three Tonys.
Tony, Tony, Tony.
Yes.
Thank you for being here tonight.
Yes.
And thank you to Dewa for really making us look bad before we even start.
Yeah. This is our 10th anniversary show.
Yeah.
I don't want to dwell on this 10th anniversary thing because it means we're really old and pretty great, but...
Yeah, no, we've come a long way since the first episode that we taped in my apartment kitchen was it early 2010 or maybe late
2009, I
think.
Yeah.
I was so nervous. I'd never cooked for Matthew before, much less like recorded audio with him.
Yeah, no, that was definitely our first time recording audio together.
It was memorable
and
awkward. Opening the condom wrapper, so tough. It's good. Only because
I
have no thumbs.
I don't remember that part.
Anyways, the goat joke, guys.
Okay. That's right. There were so many goats at Molly's apartment for some reason. It's very sexy.
Yeah. So, anyway, Matthew.
Okay. So, we are going to celebrate this anniversary by doing something we have never done before. It does not involve a condom.
And I can't believe...
We're going to do it bareback. Oh, no. Oh, no. Why did I say that?
All right.
I'm out of here.
And I can't figure out what to do with my mic cord. It's really awkward. Okay. Anyway, no. We've never done this before. And now that we have thought of it, at least at this point in the show, we think we want to do it every time we do a live episode. So let's see how it goes.
Let's definitely count these chickens.
Let's really set the stage.
All right.
Okay.
So
here's what we're going to do.
We're calling this the lightning round, a.k.a. chunk style. And, I mean, you already know what we're going to do because we did a call for topics, but instead of choosing a topic, you know, if there's one thing we love, it's doing extra work to prepare for an episode. But this time we decided to forego that, and we've got this bowl of topics here, and we are going to do 10 episodes of Spilled Milk tonight in front of you with no preparation, entirely improvised.
Yes. And what I'm really excited about is Matthew and I truly do not know what any of the suggestions were this evening. We set up a dedicated email address.
Yes.
for people to send topic ideas, and it went straight to producer Abby, and she kept it a secret from us. I'm so excited. I've never had a dedicated email address for anything before.
Molly was more excited about this dedicated email address than I've ever seen her excited about anything.
I know.
When we
were talking this morning, and we were like, you know, we need to come up with our like opening bit, and I was like, oh, the dedicated email address.
Yeah. And I was like, okay, what about it? Molly's like, no, just dedicated email address. Yeah. People are going to love it.
Yeah. Anyway, hold on. So we need to discuss the ground rules, though.
Yes.
Because, you know, so other than the fact that we don't know, as of this point in the evening, what any of the topics are, Matthew, what are some of the other rules?
So some of the rules are, no peeking. Like, we can't, like peek into the bowl and see what we're going to pick. We just have to go with what we get. We take turns drawing topics. Mm-hmm.
And we cannot pass.
Right.
So any topic that we choose, we have to do.
Producer Abby has a buzzer, and she is going to buzz us when our time is done and we have to move on to the next topic. Mm-hmm. Abby told me that she paid 99 cents on the App Store for the buzzer and is going to bill us for that.
And the other thing is that we're going to... So, you know, usually with our secrets...
I have no idea what's happening right now.
Usually with our episodes, it follows a certain... sequence.
You call them episodes. We call them secrets.
Usually with our episodes, we follow a certain sequence, right?
So we've sequence.
We've got our wholesome fanfare that uh-huh. we enter to. Okay? And then we introduce ourselves and we talk about our moms.
That's right.
And then we say what the show topic is, and then we do memory lane. Okay? Yeah. We're cutting straight to memory lane,
right.
And we're limiting it to one sentence of memory lane,
yes.
per person. I want you to know how hard this is for me, guys, because mm-hmm. I can easily do 3 to 5 minutes of memory lane
well,
by
myself. Well,
you haven't
myself. Seen the topics yet.
Oh, that's true.
I just realized, anyway. Do you think Abby's going to bill us 99 cents for every time she buzzes?
Yeah.
Okay.
So anyway, okay. So those are the ground rules.
Yeah.
Is there anything else that we need? Hold on. Anything else
I
here?
I mean, I think we've been stalling as long as we can.
All right. Oh, okay. We have to stick with the topic until Abby buzzes.
Yes.
And we must move on when the buzzer goes off.
But does that mean we have to stick with the topic, like, to the same extent that we usually stick with a topic?
Yeah.
Okay, great.
So if we're talking, if somebody put in ham and cheese sandwiches, for instance, like our episode like 7 years ago, we can totally talk about making out.
Yes. Okay.
Okay, so
right.
here we go.
Who's picking first? We didn't decide.
You.
All right, I'm picking first.
Okay. Abby, start the clocks.
M&M's.
Oh, M&M's.
Memory
okay.
lane.
So, memory lane. So, so I really like peanut M&M's.
Okay, great.
No, my cousin met her husband at a party where my cousin was dressed up as the green M&M. Pretty sexy, huh?
When I was in eighth grade, that was when I heard that green M&Ms make you horny, and I heard this from my math teacher.
Have you ever tried it?
Tried what? Eating green M&Ms?
Well, yeah, seeing if it works.
I mean, I guess it works in the sense that, like, probably I ate some green M&Ms and then, like, had some thoughts that I shouldn't share on stage.
What about, like...
I don't know if it was the M&Ms that had anything to do with it.
Do you feel that... Oh, God. Oh,
I gotcha.
Do you feel that any particular M&M variety is, like, more erotic than another?
Oh, like a type of M&M, not
yeah,
necessarily
I mean,
a
like
color?
The peanut, the crunchy. I mean, the crunchy, that is a really, really, really complex crunch.
That's interesting, though, because I think of crunchy as one of the least erotic textures.
It's true.
Maybe it's because there's a lot.
It's true. There's no, although I was just talking the other day about what it's like when you accidentally bite your tongue or the inside of your cheek.
Oh,
it's
there's
really
nothing
crunchy.
More erotic than that.
Well, no, because I was trying to think about whether any body parts are crunchy.
That's
inside
what
of my
I was
cheek is
say.
Crunchy.
Yes. Like there's not any good ways to fill in the blank, like baby, your blank is so crunchy, right?
Yeah. What about the peanut butter ones? They're smooth.
Are they sexy?
Well, they
yeah,
melt
I think they
nicely.
Are. I, when you said that, that was the first thing I thought was like the peanut butter ones. Like of all the M&Ms, those are the ones that I most want to just like leave in my mouth and like suck on until the candy coating dissolves and starts to break down, and then the chocolate
like your,
dissolves.
Like the lining of your cheek.
And like the lining of my cheek dissolves.
Abby, ring the buzzer.
No. I'm pretty sure that's not in the ground rules.
I'm sorry. Okay. All right.
You have to pay 99 cents to get your own buzzer.
Okay. Anything else about M&M's? M&M's. How do you feel about mixing M&M's in with the popcorn at the movie theater?
Love it. Absolutely love it.
Okay.
I think we recently had movie night at my house and had M&M's and popcorn, and I did do this, and I was very satisfied.
Did you guys separate then the popcorn from the M&Ms like you guys do when you buy mixed nuts? Has anybody heard Matthew talk about what his family does with a tin of mixed nuts? It is obscene.
It's a beautiful thing that the whole family can do together. We sit and watch Jeopardy, and we open up a big jar of Target mixed nuts, and we sort them into the types of nuts that each family member likes best.
It is true. I was over at Matthew's house recently, and I was like, I'm a little hungry. I was about to leave. We'd finished our taping. I was like, do you have any nuts? He pulled out. Oh, thank God.
All right. Oh. Said, do you have any nuts?
That was really
and he pulled
long.
Out. Good thing we got buzzed. All right, you're up.
Okay, all right. Okay, I'm going to do a little blind
picking.
Blind tasting. Oh, cannibalism.
Okay.
And I
memory lane.
This one has like a little winky face under it. And this is from Amanda. All right, cannibalism. So I have always wanted to do. No, I've just always wanted to. So are there like weird things that you really want to study up on? Like I've kind of always wanted to know about what it would be like to be in some sort of like really insular religious sect. I've also wondered what it would be like to be in the Donner Party.
Okay. Yeah. Is that your memory lane? I'm trying to think, like, when did I
forget
first,
how this
like,
works. The sequence.
Come across the concept of cannibalism?
Because
I do remember hearing about the Donner Party when I was a kid. And, like, it didn't seem like as much of a party as the name implied, I guess.
Well, and I feel like then that show Party of Five came out, and I was like, what is this, like, what is this use of party? I've never heard this before. It doesn't seem like there are any green M&Ms here.
Okay, right. But Donner Party of Five is that's what you were hoping for?
Yeah, it had Nev Campbell in it.
Okay, but I think like we're dancing around the thing that everyone wants us to talk about since this is a food show, which is if you had to do it.
Yeah. What body part would you go for first?
Which part would you go for first?
Okay, well, so I think I would go for, I'm thinking about like what's going to be the most tender.
Right.
And I'm thinking about... Well, so, you know, I was explaining to my daughter recently, like, how with different parts of the animal, you have to cook it for different lengths of time. Mm-hmm. You know, the muscles that get used more are tougher. You need to cook them longer, really let the fat melt, right? So I'm thinking that I would go for maybe, is there a tenderloin on a human?
I was just going to say the same thing.
Right?
Do humans have a tenderloin?
Right?
I don't know.
Do I have, like, some sort of strip along? Does anybody want to check a strip along my back? Like
yeah,
along my spine?
But the tenderloin's sort of like inside the rib cage, right?
I thought it was like just along the back.
I don't know.
Anyway, what would you start with, Matthew?
Well, I feel like the tastiest part of every animal seems to be the shoulder, so I guess I would go for the shoulder. But you'd have to braise it.
How would you prepare? Okay, you braise
braised.
It. What about like what aromatics would you go with?
Something really strong. Like I mean, we talked about braising things in miso this morning. I think like you really want like something that can stand up to what's probably a pretty gamey meat.
What makes you think it's a gamey meat? Is it all the stuff we eat?
Because I think humans are pretty lean compared to a lot of the animals we eat, and like the muscles are pretty well exercised overall. Depending on the human.
Does anybody in here have any experience?
Wait, so.
Oh no, no, you don't. Okay, Matthew, your turn.
Okay. Calzones. Okay.
Oh, okay. This is so palatable.
Yeah.
Okay.
Anything was going to be palatable.
Memory lane. Take it away, Matthew.
I have always loved calzones. I definitely had them when I was a kid. I've always been really nervous about saying the word because I don't know if it's calzone or calzone.
I think I've heard you say both.
We were definitely a calzone pronunciation family when I was growing up, but I felt like my friends would say calzone, and I wanted to be a cool kid, and I still feel very conflicted about it.
How do you feel about, like, when do you eat it? Because I think that the thing with a calzone, you know, it's like a large hot pocket. Okay, it is.
Yes,
and
the hot pocket came first, and then someone was like, "What if we made this bigger
made
and made
really
it like a
big.
Folded over pizza?"
Yeah, Yeah. Anyway, no. So, but here's the issue with foods like that. Where
did you know Hot Pockets have been found in Neolithic
cheese on the inside? Where there's like molten cheese on the inside. The thing is, you want to eat it while it's still like hot and gooey, but you also want to still have your cheek so that somebody can eat it later. You don't want to melt it.
So true. Yeah. Wait, is this like in a cannibalistic sense or in a sexual sense?
I keep trying to link it
sense.
Back thematically to the cannibalism mm-hmm. and the M&Ms. Melts in your mouth, not in your hand.
You're like drawing a line, like a dotted line, like you've got a wall up here with like with string and pins and stuff, trying to connect every topic we do.
I'm like Claire Danes in, what was it, Homeland?
Yeah, I think you are like that. What was the question again?
So when do you eat it? Because it's very, very, very hot.
I eat it when it is placed in front of me. You mean like how long do I wait before for it to cool
yeah,
down?
Yeah, yeah. Do you wait or do you just suffer the
heat?
Well,
I think I do suffer the heat. That's something I've always done. I think I will like cut into it so that some of the steam can escape and then it cools down fast enough, I guess.
Okay.
But do you when you have a calzone, do you want to like pick it up and eat it by hand, or are you a knife and fork?
Well,
calzoner?
I don't know if you've noticed that I didn't do a memory lane. I've never had a calzone. No.
Wait, have you had a Hot Pocket?
I've not had a Hot Pocket or a calzone.
Oh wow.
I've had some pizza bagels.
I know what we're doing. Okay.
I don't know. Does that count?
No.
I feel like you know, like things that are pizza adjacent.
Okay. Oh, what are other things? Okay, so pizza bagels, like pizza,
French bread pizzas. Somebody just add the French bread pizza?
All the things Molly just said are delicious. No, pizza, English muffin pizza is awesome. Trust me.
Anyway, yeah, no, I've never had a calzone.
I will
God,
make
this
you.
This buzzer cannot come
I will,
soon.
No, I will make you a calzone.
Okay.
Like, I don't know if it's going to... Oh, thank God. All right,
you're up. It's giving me heart palpitations. Okay.
No, I love this.
Wait a minute. Hold on. I feel like I should do... Oh, I'm excited about this one. Everyone, this is fish sauce.
Oh, okay.
Here we go. If this one is yours, thank you. Fish sauce. Okay.
Memory lane.
Fish sauce. I think one of my first memories of fish sauce was... I feel like fish sauce sort of like swept onto the scene for like at least white Americans... Maybe, I don't know, like 15 years ago, 20
yeah,
years ago.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
And I remember making like a Vietnamese rice noodle salad with chicken in it. And have you ever noticed that chicken and fish sauce do a weird thing together where all of a sudden they both taste like tuna?
Nope.
You haven't? I can't eat chicken and fish sauce together. Like, I don't want a fish sauce dressing anywhere near my chicken. It all tastes like canned tuna.
No, because one of my favorite
things
to make...
magical metamorphosis.
I am not a canned tuna fan, but one of my favorite things to make is lob, like with like ground chicken.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
With a dressing with like fish sauce and lime juice and chilies and garlic, and it does not taste anything like canned tuna to me.
Well, take me down your memory lane.
I have legitimate fish sauce memory lane. The first food article that I ever got paid to write was for the Sunday Seattle Times, and
now
it was
you're
about
just bragging.
Fish sauce.
What year was it?
I want to say 2001, 2002.
So this was around the time that I met Matthew at a chocolate tasting
That's
party.
That's right.
And I remember, so I don't think that Matthew's child, Iris, had been born. We were both wee little babies. I had a boyfriend who was a vegan.
Uh-huh.
And we went to a chocolate tasting party that was held by a couple who Matthew and I both knew through mm-hmm. the food forum eGullet. Mm-hmm. And I remember I thought Matthew seemed so old and wise.
Were you
like 29?
Probably.
Yeah.
The longer we do this show, the more we are the same age. Because it's true. Like back then, I probably was proportionally much older than you.
I should also say that the playlist we were listening to tonight is a playlist that Matthew and I made for producer Abby, who is significantly younger than both of us and didn't know any of the music that Matthew and I grew up with. So if any of you were feeling nostalgic listening to that music, well, you're probably closer to our age. than Abby's uh-huh. age. But anyway, okay, so you got your start writing about fish sauce.
And I remember I went into the office, like the editorial office of the Seattle Times Sunday Magazine, and they showed me like my article all pasted up, and it was great, except they'd given it the headline, "The Ketchup of Asia." And I'm like, that could not be more wrong. So I was like, can we redo that headline? And they like rewrote the headline right in front of me. And I was like, oh, I'm doing journalism. I love fish sauce. All right.
Your turn.
My turn.
Guys, I can't tell you the relief that washes over me. It's like I'm in cold sweats by the time the buzzer goes off. And then all of a sudden the sweat evaporates and I start all over again.
All right. This is licorice, and it says producer Abby loves, and point with an arrow pointing to licorice.
Oh, so, could this possibly be from producer Abby?
No, it also has a name on it. It says it's from Alicia. Most of them don't have names on them, but we'll just call it Alicia.
So salty licorice. We did a licorice episode years and years and years ago, and you had a friend in Norway or Sweden.
Denmark, right? Maybe?
I tried all the other Scandinavian countries. Anyway, you had a friend who sent you some salted licorice, and it was one of the most painful episodes I've ever done with you. That's right.
My memory lane is Molly ate this salted licorice, and it got stuck in her teeth.
I think it was the first time I ever cried in front of you.
I think so. Yeah. I like salted licorice. I think it's great.
So, so tell me about this, Matthew. Without the benefit of any research, because, you know, we usually do all our research on Wikipedia, but Matthew's having to do it right now in his own brain.
Oh, okay.
Which is much harder. So, tell me about salted licorice. What's the story?
So, as I understand it, like, the double salted licorice is called double salted, not because it has, like, twice the salt, but because it has two kinds of salt.
Ooh.
Sodium chloride and ammonium chloride, I think. So, it's got, like, a funky, like, urine-adjacent flavor, I would say.
that topic got canceled so fast.
All right.
Okay. All right, my turn.
Now I know how to make the buzzer happen.
Just say urine adjacent. Okay. All right, Harissa, depending on how you say it. This one also is from someone in the audience tonight. Thank you.
Okay, so I know this is a spicy North African sauce.
Yes.
That's all I know about it.
Okay, but what about your memory lane?
That was it.
Okay. So when I was in my junior year of college, I did like two quarters in the Paris program of my college.
Mm-hmm.
And at that time, the sort of restaurant that everybody was talking about that wasn't fine dining, but that was supposed to be very sexy. You know, there's always like a restaurant in any given city that's just opened that's like the sexy restaurant.
But
right?
I mean, in Paris, aren't all of them the sexy restaurant?
The restaurant that I remember hearing about was this Moroccan place called 404. Unfortunately, I think I probably took my mom there.
Wait, like, and you tried to find it, but it was not found?
I hadn't even thought
so
of
dumb.
That.
So, don't encourage that.
Okay. It was called 404, guys. This was like 1999. Anyway, it was very
dim. They had that in 1999.
It was very dimly lit, and they had tagines and all sorts of things that we had never heard about at that time coming from where I came from. And anyway, that was my first encounter with harissa, and it clearly left a mark on me as being something you eat at sexy restaurants.
Okay, that sounds great.
What else do you think you eat at sexy restaurants?
I don't know. I tried to go to a sexy restaurant once called 301, but it had moved permanently to another location. Only in Seattle. Oh, that made me so happy.
I didn't get it.
Was that the right code? Anyone know HTTP codes? All right.
Oh, yes. You got somebody back there.
Okay.
You got somebody.
Thank you.
Okay. Anyway, do you ever use harissa or harissa?
No. It's not like I have anything against it. It's just like I think for any cook, there's like some ingredients that you have like always used and some you just like haven't incorporated into your repertoire, and that's one of mine.
This is true.
Like, every time I've had it, I'm like, this is a hot sauce. I like it.
I sent Matthew a photo of a recipe yesterday. It was a miso glazed salmon, and it called for sake, and I didn't have any sake. And Matthew writes me back, like, totally unironically.
Molly said, what can I substitute for sake? And I said, use Shaoxing wine.
And I was like, you think I have that? I don't have any sake. Like, why would I have Shaoxing wine?
So I said, use harissa.
Anyway.
Anyway. Seattle's best loaf of bread.
Oh.
I definitely have an opinion on this.
Yeah, take it away.
Okay, so, and this is my memory lane also, because I think maybe, like, possibly the first thing of Molly's that I ever remember reading was a post that she wrote on Orangette about the Walnut Levain.
It was this short-lived website called Seattleist, actually.
Oh, okay.
And I had an unpaid writing job for
that. Nice.
It was awesome.
When would this have been?
I felt wealthy.
Like,
this was like 2005.
Yeah, that sounds about right. And yeah. And Molly wrote this article about the Walnut Levain from Columbia City Bakery. And I don't remember if I'd already had it or not, but that is my favorite bread in Seattle.
It still is now?
I think it still is. Like, you know, I will... Columbia City Bakery does a booth at the Broadway Farmers Market.
Uh-huh.
And sometimes I'll get the Walnut Levain, and it's absolutely every bit as good as it always has been. It's just a brilliant loaf of bread. I'm not super into flavored breads in general, but it's the best.
I feel like this is a tricky topic because we're both so earnest about it.
I know.
No, I really love Seawolf Bakery.
Yeah.
In the Fremont area. Fremont Wallingford. I don't know what to...
But that's new.
It is new. It is a bready come lately. Anyway, no, what I really love about it is... So my thing is I buy bread whenever I'm like near these bakeries.
Okay.
I just hoard it. No, I like if I'm driving past and I'm like, oh, I should stop at Seawolf and get a baguette.
Because,
well... So I bought a Seawolf baguette the other day, and then we didn't use it for like 4 days, and mm-hmm. we ate it last night and toasted it, and it was still delicious. So there you go. That's my winner.
All right. That's pretty good.
That's my standard right now.
Back when we were working on the sourdough episode, which is like the most work we've ever put, or at least the most work I've ever put into one episode, I was baking bread at home a lot. I haven't been lately, but my homemade bread was getting pretty good.
I wanted to tell you that I ignored Sylvia for about 6 weeks, long enough for her to get like a almost black layer of hooch on top.
Sylvia is our sourdough starter.
Anyway, and Matthew gave her to me with a Google Doc, with a link to a Google Doc, and it was instructions on how to feed Sylvia, and then the final instruction was, try not to kill Sylvia.
All of my gifts come with a Google Doc. Fucking worst.
It is true. Anyway, so I was really devoted. I mean, I had a note in my calendar, like once weekly, feed Sylvia. I was keeping her in the fridge. Anyway. But I let her go for like 6 weeks and, you know, the like liquid separated and she started to smell all... Who is hissing out there? Stop hissing at me. She started to smell really liquory.
Yeah.
Anyway, I fed her yesterday and guys, she's back.
Yeah. She's hard. It's hard to kill a sourdough.
Yeah, no, I didn't kill Sylvia.
In fact, never mind.
Okay, here we go. Garlic knots.
Oh, yes.
Guys, I had my first garlic knot tonight.
This is so puzzling to me.
So, yes. I was formerly a part of Dino's tomato pie upstairs.
You're formerly part of a pie.
And I was formerly part of a pie. I escaped. I think that there is some sort of a nursery rhyme about me. Anyway, I remember when Brandon was deciding what to put on the windows upstairs, and one of them was like world famous garlic knots. And I think he got some like nasty Yelp reviews from people being like, don't claim that you've been around for decades. You haven't been around for decades. It's disrespectful to restaurants that have.
Yeah, no, those are like naughty come lately.
But I had my first garlic knot here tonight.
That... I don't know what to say to that. Like,
I don't know either.
And to be fair, like I probably had my first garlic knot like a couple years ago, but they're so good. So
are garlic knots like, you know, of necessity always served with tomato sauce? Is that like a requirement?
Well, I mean, but I think marinara is a tomato sauce, right? Oh, okay.
Oh,
our next topic is going to be marinara sauce. I think, yeah, they usually have a marinara tomato dipping. I'm not taking sides on the whole marinara tomato beef.
I think the sauce that we had here tonight, I think that it was an uncooked tomato sauce.
Okay.
I think it was the one on the round pie.
Right.
It's up to you whether you want to call that a marinara.
Okay. But anyway, I love making garlic knots. They're so easy to make. Like anytime you have some pizza dough, whether it's homemade or like store-bought pizza dough or even like pizza dough from a tube, like you just kind of roll it out into a snake and tie it in a knot and then you toss it with some garlic butter, like sprinkle it with some garlic salt or garlic powder.
But why
so
not
easy
just do garlic
and everybody
bread?
Loves them. It's different. Like a garlic bread has the texture of bread, and a garlic knot has more like a chewy pizza texture.
Okay.
And it's so fun to toss the cooked garlic knots in garlic butter. Like it's too rare that you get to like make a food and then kind of shake that food up. In fact, I can't think of any other examples.
So no, my dad used to do this weird thing when he. This is so weird.
Okay.
So both of my parents really like making ratatouille. I grew up in Oklahoma. Anyway, but they had very different ways of doing it. And what my dad would do is he would cut up all the vegetables, you know, the zucchini, the eggplant, the onions, the peppers. He would put it all in like a grocery size brown paper bag with like a couple tablespoons of flour, and then would fold it over and shake it all up, with the idea being that then when he like browned it all in a Dutch oven and added some like, you know, canned tomato or whatever, it would thicken it.
Seems
but
plausible.
He mostly just got flour like everywhere.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Fernet. Is it? Wait. I have to ask you again. Is it Fernet or Fernet?
It's Fernet.
Also.
Oh God.
Do you
I
want
know
a
what's
shot
about
of
to
Fernet?
Happen.
Yes.
We're gonna get shots of
the
Fernet.
The answer is yes.
Okay. Okay. Fernet. Matthew. Memory lane.
I'm not positive. I know what this is, but I think I'm about to have my first shot of it.
Wait, you've never had Fernet?
Well, I may have had it in something. It's like an herbal liqueur,
it
right?
It is. Okay. It is. It's one of those like it's
a
in
digestif.
The, it's a digestif. It's within the category of Amari. It is an Italian bitter liqueur. It's generally consumed after a meal. Matthew's gonna hate it.
Thank you so much.
I can't.
Now, do
wait.
I actually have to shoot it, or can
I'm
I sip it?
I'm not gonna shoot it. I'm okay. gonna sip it. I love that. It's kind of, it's a little bit like drinking caramel mixed with toothpaste.
That's a really apt description.
I love it. No, I remember, so I hope that a lot of you have been to Montana, the bar right down the street.
Yeah.
So when Montana first opened, and maybe still now, one of the things that they used to always serve was, I think they called it like the bartender's handshake, and it was, it was a Rachel's
Do
ginger.
Do not look that up on Urban Dictionary.
I think it was a Rachel's ginger beer with a shot of Fernet, which is a brilliant combination.
That sounds like it would be good, because yeah. Rachel's ginger beer is sweet, and like it sounds like it would be a good compliment.
Anyway, how do you feel about this?
I mean, I think it's doing what it's supposed to do, I guess.
I think...
The toothpaste thing. So recently, like, as you know...
Thank you.
As you may
Thank
know,
you
sometimes I
us.
Like to travel to Japan. And something I learned on a recent trip to Japan is that root beer is not very popular in Japan. And people say, like, when they taste it, it tastes like toothpaste because it's got, like, that winter green flavor to it. And I had never noticed this before it was pointed out. And now when I drink root beer, I can't notice anything else.
Yeah, no, it's really weird. What are other flavors where you get so used to the whole of it that you can't actually tell what's going on in there?
I mean, I think, like,
you
cola.
You get so used to the whole of it.
You get used to the whole. Well, I mean, Coca-Cola.
Who knows what's going on in there?
In the whole,
ever.
Right. I think Coca-Cola, like cola flavor is a combination of like citrus, cinnamon, and vanilla. Mm-hmm. But like when it's well balanced, you don't really taste any of those things.
I was thinking something that wasn't a soda.
Oh, okay.
But I'm just going to keep sitting here waiting
that.
For you to answer it because I don't have an answer. Okay, does anybody have any ideas?
Something that well, it's got to be some kind of candy, right? Where you like, all right, I think it's your turn to pick.
Okay. Thank you for the Fernet.
Oh, I'm coming around on it.
Okay. Oh, okay. This is fun. Okra.
Okay.
Okay. I'll take memory lane.
Yeah.
All right. So when I was growing up, I made this really good friend at day camp in one summer. Her name was Paige Cleveland. Her dad, okay. Vic. If your name is Vic, you have to own a bar. And he owned a bar. And the bar was called VZDs. And
that
it still exists in Oklahoma.
Like a disease.
It does. But anyway, that was the first time I ever had fried okra. I was hanging out with my friend Paige. and stopping by her dad's bar during the daytime. We were like 10.
You got Fernet shots.
Anyway, now that I think about it, like, so her parents were divorced. Her mom lived in California. Her dad lived in Oklahoma. And now that I think about it, like, the most prominent part of her dad's house was this massive bed made out of driftwood with animal skins on the bed.
Wow.
And now that I think about it, it really stands out in my memory.
So much sex.
It was the okra. I hear it makes you potent.
The okra makes.
I think that's the thing about okra.
Do you think it's like, is that based on like the shape of the okra or the
texture? No, I think it's something about like the properties of the okra.
Okay. I don't have strong feelings about okra one way or the other. I know it's one of those things that you're supposed to love it or hate it, but like I've not totally gotten on board with the slimy texture, so I do like prefer a fried okra. Mm-hmm. But like a gumbo with okra in it, I like that.
I think okra is delicious. A friend of mine, her husband is from Tennessee, and he does this like cold salad that is, he does it like when he's cooking like a pork shoulder.
Okay.
He will blanch some okra, like just really, really briefly, mm-hmm. and cut it up into maybe like thirds with wedges of a really delicious ripe tomato and like a sweet onion, like a Walla Walla or a Vidalia or something like that, and dress it with red wine vinegar and olive oil, and it's so delicious. Crunchy quality. It's not slimy.
Okra, I think, is one...
Grill it?
I think it's one of the most attractive vegetables.
Smoke it and grill it. Wow, but it's so small. Do you like thread it onto skewers? I'm sorry, Matthew, you're going to have to get down now. I have a new host.
Yeah. We swap hosts every...
Smoke it or you grill it. I feel like this is the beginning of a song.
Can we go back to this bed? Like, okay, so it was like a giant driftwood bed. Like the bed frame was made out of driftwood?
It was like when you come upon like an entire tree that's been tossed around in the ocean for a while and is washed up on the shore and some teenagers have been using it to build a lean-to to have sex under.
Yep, it's all checks out.
It was like built out of
every
those.
Time I go to the beach. Do you think he had to chase off the teenagers before building the bed?
He was very handsome. He was like kind of strawberry blonde, but like tan.
And like how many different animal skins do you think? Like from like a bunch of different animals?
I think just a cow. I think it was just a cow.
A cow skin?
I think. It was like a splotchy one. What am I looking for? It was a paint or a pinto or a...
Okay. Wow, really racking up a bill on that buzzer. Okay.
Wow. Okay.
This one is...
Wait a minute. What number are we on? Surely we're up to 10.
Don't know. Flambé.
Oh, flambé.
Okay.
Have you ever flambéed at home?
I flambéed at home. I'm so glad this came up because I have flambéed at home and not just in a sexual way. I recently have been making this recipe that is for oven pulled pork, and it's from Serious Eats. It's from friend of the show, Kenji Lopez-Ald. And for reasons I don't know, like whether this has anything to do with making the recipe taste better or whether it's just cool to burn stuff, you pour some bourbon onto the pork shoulder before it goes in the oven and then light it up and flambé it until it's done, until all the alcohol burns off. And it is so satisfying to set things on fire. Like, I was absolutely a pyromaniac when I was a child. And, like, you know, I would, like, you know, one time I was melting some wax on the stove when I was a kid, and it exploded, and luckily I wasn't injured.
Oh, was that how the Great Seattle Fire happened? Didn't it start with, like, somebody melting wax?
This was in Portland, but yes.
Oh.
There's
there was
a
strong
song.
Wind.
If you go to the Mohai, there's a song about the Great Seattle Fire, and it started.
How does it go? Does it start with you smoke it or you grill it? Does it?
Yes, and there's a singing glue pot because it was like a glue pot caught fire, and that's how the fire started. And like, definitely go to Mohai and meet this singing glue pot. It's great.
Okay.
What were we?
Flambé.
Flambé.
Okay.
All right. So like you get to like light a big piece of meat on fire in your kitchen, and Kenji says it's okay.
Wait a minute. Didn't we do an episode that involved Bananas Foster?
Bananas Foster, yes.
Which is also like involves flambéing, right?
We need to contrive a way to burn something like set something on fire every episode.
So I grew up with so you know, as with most of us, my food.
We have a bowl of paper right here.
My like, you know, some of my food prejudices come from my family, and I remember my mom like seeing Bananas Foster on menus in Oklahoma City and sort of scorning it as this like old school thing. But then Matthew and I had Bananas Foster, and I was like, this thing, it deserves to come back from the dead and have like a sequel and a part three, and like it needs to go on and on. It's so good.
That is an amazing coincidence, because on my memory lane, my mom used to threaten me with bananas and rum. Like, if you know, if you don't behave, like, I'm going to make you eat bananas and rum.
She's here. She's here
in the
tonight,
audience.
Though.
This is true. And, you know, it turns out bananas and rum is delicious.
And it's allowed, says friend of the show, Kenji Lopez Alt.
Yes, Kenji, friend of the show, Kenji Lopez Alt says you
oh,
can
God,
burn
it's
anything.
Over.
Oh.
Oh, God.
I think
it's
we're being played
Oscar
off.
Music. Okay,
oh,
so.
I want to do more.
God, guys, it's been a really beautiful
day. Can we do one more?
Okay, fine. Okay.
All right,
okay.
You pick it, Molly.
Okay, this is the last one, and then you can watch us sit in agony and come up with our closing joke. Okay. All right, artichokes.
Okay.
This is from listener Shelley.
Oh, can we do one less than this?
All right, artichokes. Okay, so Matthew, do you cook artichokes at home often?
Nope.
You don't? Really?
No.
Oh
I
my
never
gosh.
Have.
I feel like I probably cook like a dozen artichokes a year.
Wow.
Which I think is more than I cook anything else, actually.
Anything? Like more than pasta?
No. But like I've really got it down to an art. Have you ever stabbed yourself on the little spiny thing when you're the spiny leaves, right? You only do it once, and then you learn to respect the artichoke. You learn how to like wield your scissors to cut off the stuff. You develop a system. Cut off the stuff.
Cut
I'm very
stuff.
Specific at this point in the show. Matthew, do you have anything to say?
Well, I think I've just learned that I flambé more often than I artichoke. Like wife of the show, Lori, who is also in the audience, has occasionally made an artichoke, and I like the flavor of an artichoke, and I like that it's so complicated to eat, but
well,
it's not something that I'm gonna like get into like on my own of my own accord.
So I have no problem getting involved with like, you know, one of the large like globe artichokes.
Okay.
I think that's pretty darn easy to prepare, very easy to cook. Matthew, you just like steam it.
Okay.
Very easy. You can do it. However, chefs are constantly trying to get us to use those tiny little artichokes.
They
where, like,
are?
By the yes! Oh, my God. Like, if you have bought any kind of cookbook that was at all produced by a descendant of Alice Waters, it is going to have something in there that involves the tiny little artichokes where by the time you pare them down, you've got, like, a dime's worth of artichoke heart.
Okay.
And that I find really demoralizing. I always feel
okay.
I feel like I'm being talked down to when somebody
by the
is
chef or well, the
yeah,
or the vegetable.
No, well both.
Okay.
But I never even get to the point of being near the vegetable because I read the recipe and I'm like, guys, this is like what you do when you have like an army of like cooks. This is not what
you make you, each of them like prepare one of these baby artichokes.
In the trenches.
Yes, the cook army trenches.
Yeah. We should have stopped earlier.
You're right. Like,
yeah.
It's the show that always takes it a little bit too far.
Yeah.
All right. So we need to wrap up with our the segment that we do every single week since episode one. What have we learned?
What have we learned? We have learned.
Well, I can't stop thinking about this driftwood bed. Like, that's, like, I don't remember.
Well,
I guess we talked
a
lot about cannibalism.
I was thinking about
but
how we determined that no human body parts are crunchy.
That
so
was interesting.
I feel like these two things go together.
You know what I think could be crunchy? Earlobes, maybe?
Cartilage.
Yeah. More like a snappy way.
Have you ever had like a pig's ear or like a head cheese, right?
Uh-huh.
Like, you know, that's pretty crunchy.
So glad
snappy.
We came back around
snappy.
To this.
Snappy. I love talking about head cheese. Anyway, yeah. So, okay. So, yeah, I think maybe cartilage
do
is snappy.
One
and
time
I think that are you a biter?
like when I sit down to eat a meal, yes.
When you're in your driftwood bed.
Sticking with the meal thing.
Oh. Okay.
Love to bite into a calzone or calzone. I'll go both ways.
Okay. You heard it here first.
All right, so I guess we learned more things on this episode than I think on any other episode or set of 11 episodes ever.
I definitely learned you grill it or you smoke it.
You grill it or you smoke it.
And anything we're missing?
And you think that an animal skin that someone might put on their bed like as a covering is a splotchy cow. Just like an entire Holstein skin.
Maybe a better word
skin.
Would be pocked.
No, that would be a worse word. I don't think you know what better means.
Okay. Anyway, I'm going to stop
yes.
this now.
Okay.
I would like to thank all of you for being here
yes.
tonight. I would like to thank producer Abby and
yes.
And producer's husband Brandon for making this show possible in so many different ways.
Did we thank both Brandons already?
Oh, we should also thank Brandon Pettit, who
yes.
is not here tonight, but who generously allowed us to use this space. We've been eating his delicious pizza tonight.
Thank you to our bartender, Josh.
Woo! And thank you for watching and listening. Thank you for watching and listening to Spilled Milk, the show that...
You watch it or you listen it.
Okay, thanks.
I'm Matthew Amster Burton.
I'm Molly Weisenberg.
Bye.
You sing a little song.
You grill it or you smoke it. Oops.
You burn down the city.